This is a CBC podcast. Good news! The all-new CBC Radio app for Android is here. Completely redesigned from the ground up and optimized for Lollipop. Listen to your favorite CBC Radio programs on all Android devices. Enjoy Radio 1 and 2, Radio 3, and Sonica live streams. Plus, more than 80 of CBC Radio's most popular programs, all on demand. And that's not all. Listen to our featured stories curated for you every day. The CBC Radio app for Android. Better than ever. Go to Google Play and download today.
Still to come, with the return of the school year, we'll hear from a critic of critical thinking. He says the way we teach students to think may be doing more harm than good. He'll join us to explain, and we'll critique his critique in half an hour. But first, speaking of back to school, remember when a notebook was paper with ruled pages and no Wi-Fi connection? A return to the laptop-free classroom. Well, this is back to school season for college and university students across the country. At Vancouver Community College, they're off to an early start, and many of the students there arrived with their laptops in tow.
My name is Christina. I am currently studying a Bachelor of Science in Nursing, and I use a laptop because it allows me to take more notes faster while listening to the instructor.
For me, I use the laptop for our PowerPoint presentations in class, and I take notes underneath each slide, so that supplements the information on each slide. So when I go back to study it, I understand it better because I have my supplementation notes underneath each slide.
Well, of course, laptops are good for many, many things in addition to taking notes, and some students do admit to being prone to distraction.
I think having my laptop up, it can be a distraction because I find sometimes when the class is a little bit slower down, I tend to sometimes browse on other websites that are non-class related.
I've tried using a laptop, but I get distracted with other things because laptops can do so many things, and something pops up and I get distracted, and that's it for me.
Well, since the 1900s, universities and colleges across the country have largely embraced technology. I think that should be 1990s, my mistake. Many have encountered the use of laptops and other devices among their students. Not everyone has bought in as a professor, though. Paul Thagard teaches philosophy and cognition at the University of Waterloo. And when laptops started showing up in his classroom, he was skeptical.
6 years ago, university established Wi-Fi in most classrooms. And so the students started bringing their laptops to class. And I noticed that instead of students listening to me, they all were looking at their screens, or not all of them, but maybe 40% of the class was looking at screens rather than looking at my slides or paying attention to my lecture. So I got curious what they are actually doing. I got my teaching assistant to come into the back of the class and observe. And his estimate was that 85% of the students were doing things that had nothing at all to do with the class. They were doing text messaging, they were doing Facebook, they were doing videos, YouTube videos. Some of them were even watching television reruns. So I was really concerned about this because I teach not only philosophy but also cognitive science, and I do a lot of research in cognitive science as well. So I'm familiar with all the results on attention, which show that it's really limited. People can't concentrate on a bunch of things at once. Students think they can multitask, but what they're really doing is just flipping rapidly between one thing and another because attention is so limited. I thought of tried various things, but none of them worked very well. And then 5 years ago, I simply banned laptops altogether, required students to turn off and put away their phones as well as their laptops. And I've been really happy with the result. And students are, by and large, pretty understanding. I tell them about all the studies that have been done. A lot more have been done since then, actually, that show that students who are paying attention to what's on their screens rather than what's in class not only don't learn as much, they get poor marks. So in order to avoid distraction and to increase the amount that the students can learn, I instituted the laptop ban, and I'm really happy I did.
Paul Thagard teaches philosophy and cognition at the University of Waterloo. Well, the idea that laptops can be distracting probably does not come as a shock. And as Paul Thagard pointed out, there is research to back up the idea that students who use laptops, and even students who sit near students who use laptops, are prone to distraction. According to new research, laptops may be impeding learning even when they're being used purely for classroom tasks. Pam Mueller is a newly minted PhD graduate from Princeton University and the co-author of a research paper called The Pen is Mightier Than the Keyboard. And she's in Los Angeles. Hello.
Hi, Anna Maria.
What question were you trying to answer with your research?
So my co-author and I were interested in the question of whether when laptops are used as intended, for instance, for note-taking in a classroom, might they still be hampering performance. The way we came to this idea is I was a teaching assistant for my co-author's Psychology 101 course. And usually I would bring my laptop to class to take notes in case students had questions later. But one day I forgot it, and so I just had a notebook, and I was taking notes by hand, and I felt like I got so much more out of his lecture that day. I went up and told him that afterward. And a few days later, he said that he had a similar experience in a faculty meeting where he'd been taking notes on his laptop, realized he'd written it all down, but had no idea what anyone had been saying. So since we had these complementary intuitions, we thought we should test them.
Interesting. Okay, so can you explain how you set up your study and what you did?
Sure. We actually ran three studies. Let me tell you about the first one, because that was where we just wanted to see if this effect existed. So we brought students into the lab. We randomly assigned them either to take notes on a laptop or by hand in a notebook. We provided them the laptops and the notebooks, so the laptops didn't have access to the internet or anything like that. So when the students were in the lab, they would watch a TED Talk. We had a few different TED Talks, and we had them take notes just as they would in a classroom. We told them not to try to change their note-taking strategy. Then we gave them some distractor tasks for about half an hour and then tested them on the material.
And what did you find?
So in the test of the material, we had two different kinds of questions, factual questions, which were just literally straight facts that had been in the lectures, and then more conceptual questions, asking them to synthesize some of the facts that had been in the lectures, not bringing in content from outside, but just having to think a little more about it. And what we found was that longhand note takers did significantly better on these conceptual types of questions. And it seemed that the reason for this was that laptop note takers tended to try to transcribe the lecture verbatim. They were able to take down more notes because it is faster for most students to type, but they were trying to just transcribe what the lecturer was saying without really processing it.
Okay, that's why the conceptual. So they were sort of the same on the fact, but actual conceptual, they hadn't been able to process the same.
Right. Okay. You don't have to really process. You can just sort of be an automaton transcribing things pretty easily without having to think about them.
So then you took those results and you thought you'd do another test. What was the second test?
Right. So since we thought that the poorer results for the laptop note takers were due to this attempt to take verbatim notes, we replicated our original study. So we had the same two laptop and longhand groups. And then we added a third group, which was laptop note takers that we verbally instructed, do not take verbatim notes. It's been found to produce poorer performance, you know, just really try not to do that, essentially. But what we found was that the students were completely incapable of doing that. They took exactly as many verbatim notes as the group that wasn't instructed to do anything differently. So it seems that the intuition of students that this is the right strategy to adopt when they're typing is really difficult to break.
Interesting, like that your fingers just automatically start flying
right.
On the keyboard. Okay, so you weren't able to train them to do it differently. And so you had those results, and then you did a third test?
Right. So as one of the students pointed out, you can write down a lot more when you're taking notes on a laptop. So we thought, well, these are really interesting, but maybe in the real world it doesn't matter because the laptop note takers get to take these notes home and study them, and they'll just have so much more content written down that maybe it'll all, you know, come out even in the end in a more realistic setting. So what we did was we had students watch the lectures, take the notes, and then brought them back after a week. We didn't let them take their notes home with them because, you know, they might get lost. But we brought them back. We brought them back into the lab and let them study their notes. But what we were really surprised to find was that even when they got to study their notes, the longhand note takers still did better. This time on both conceptual and factual questions, which is a little strange to us. But it seems that if you didn't process the content when it was coming in, it doesn't really help to have a whole bunch of notes written down later. They weren't able to sort of put the content together to answer the questions as well as the longhand note takers were, even though the longhand note takers didn't have as much content written down. So that was really surprising to us.
That is very surprising. Now, you heard those clips of the students at the beginning. There were some students at Vancouver Community College who said they prefer to take notes by hand rather than on a laptop. And we've got clips of them. Listen to what they say about why.
Well, for me, I use notes because with writing, you don't get a lot of time to type everything out. So it's you have to think about what you're writing and you have to be concise. So it makes you think compared to like writing on a laptop and you just keep writing. You didn't think about it. You're just writing it randomly.
I take notes by hand and I do that because I like to make a lot of side notes and sometimes add diagrams and lots of colors and arrows. So for me, it's easier than using a laptop. I would say that my notes that I take by hand probably contain fewer words. When I take notes on the laptop, it's much more detailed. But my understanding, I think, is better when I take notes by hand.
Pam Mueller, what do you think of what they just said?
I think those are some very insightful students. No, I think that's exactly right, particularly what the first student said in terms of having to process the material and when you're going to write something down because you can't write it all down. I think they both really captured exactly what's going on, that you're really understanding it better despite having less written down.
Now, even though you had experienced this anecdotally, were you surprised at the results of your own research?
I think that the original finding was not super surprising. We had hypothesized that laptop note takers would do worse. I think what we were a little surprised by was the mechanism. We looked at a couple different mechanisms. We thought it might have something to do with working memory. We thought it might have something to do with the actual content of the notes. But really what seemed to be driving it was this verbatim overlap. So that came as a surprise to us. And then, as I said before, the really big surprise was that even if you get to study your notes, having that extra content written down isn't helping you. So.
Yeah, that's pretty worrisome. Is it possible that there's a better way to use laptops that would allow people to take advantage of what a laptop offers? You know, the ability to take lots and lots of notes and maybe move them around or share them or other things without creating the problems that you've identified?
So I think for those last two things, for the sharing and the moving them around, yes. I think that the ability to take a lot of notes is perhaps, you know, confounded with the exactly what is wrong with how people are using the laptops. But your basic question, you know, is there a better way to use laptops? My co-author and I do think that, yes, there is, that this isn't something specific about the act of handwriting versus the act of typing. But our verbal intervention wasn't effective at getting people to not use their laptops in this ineffective manner. It's going to take something more, maybe a mechanical intervention, an app that slows down your typing speed or something like that. You know, we kicked around silly ideas like making people wear gloves or taping their hands together to force them to slow down. But this is a really hard habit to break. We did see some suggestion in our data, although there wasn't enough power to really state this as a strong result. We did find some evidence that the students who preferred to take longhand notes in real life, when they were assigned to the laptop condition, they tended to not take as many verbatim notes as most of the students did. So it seems like those students who had, you know, extensive experience with taking non-verbatim elective notes were a little better at using the technology in a beneficial manner. So maybe that suggests that long-term training might help.
Mm-hmm. Now, beyond note-taking, we have heard students talk about using laptops to collaborate on projects or do PowerPoint presentations or write research papers. Did you find any reason to worry about students using laptops for those purposes?
No, I don't think our results suggest that. I think there's certainly, you know, a lot of positive things about using computers for educational purposes. It's just the way that students are using them when they're processing content that they need to be taking in from the professor that's not helping them.
And we heard both students and a professor speak about students getting distracted by laptops in the classroom. Is that borne out in the research on the subject?
Right, yes. Prior to our work, there had been several studies about the distraction capabilities of laptops in the classroom. So whenever anyone brings up, you know, laptop bans and things like that, yes, our results are important because they suggest that, you know, even if there wasn't this distraction, there might be a problem. But in the real world, this distraction is a huge issue, and it's very hard to get students to overcome that. There's the argument that students are adults, they should be able to choose whether they want to pay attention or not. But I think putting this distraction in front of students is sort of an unnecessary hindrance.
Are you going to be teaching any classes this fall?
Not this fall. I'm doing some consulting at the moment. I'm hoping to be a law professor, so I will be fighting this battle in the near future.
I was just going to ask you, so when you're a law professor, will you ban laptops in the classroom?
I think I will. I had one professor who adopted an interesting strategy that I think I liked. He banned the laptops, but he had two students who rotated, who were scribes every day, who basically were just taking verbatim notes. You know, that alleviated people's fears that they wouldn't have the content later. But, you know, 98% of the students were still super engaged and taking notes longhand and processing it.
Fascinating stuff. I'm sure it's going to be quoted by many professors now. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Pam Mueller, co-author of a study entitled The Pen is Mightier Than the Keyboard. She joined us from Los Angeles. Well, not everyone's ready to throw in the towel when it comes to laptops in the classroom. Chris Buttle teaches field biology and quantitative ecology at McGill University. He joins us from Montreal. Hello.
Good morning, Anna Maria.
Now, Pam Mueller has outlined studies that show those who take notes on laptops don't do as well on tests. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't dispute some of the findings, but I think it actually points to a larger issue around technology in the classroom and how we kind of need to rethink how the classroom environment actually works. So to me, the real issue is a classic delivery of content in a lecture hall the right way to go for teaching and learning? And if you question that, then the question around technology and laptops in the classroom becomes very, very different.
How do you use laptops in the classroom?
Well, I don't have any kind of ban on any kind of technology. And in fact, I think sort of opening the doors to technology is the way to go and to really harness. I like to harness the distraction is one way of putting it. They always talk about distraction with technology, but laptops and technology can play a really powerful role in the classroom, whether it's students fact-checking during a lecture, whether it's students, you know, tweeting or using social media as a way to engage during lecture and then after lecture as well to sort of bring the content of the classroom to a much broader audience and have a broader audience take part in the classroom activities itself.
So you embrace the distraction.
Embrace the distraction. That's exactly right.
But talk to me a little bit more about that. So how would you, like if you have them tweeting and like how do you actually, you still need to direct them into the area that you want to go.
Well, exactly. And I think the real problem, distraction in the classroom is just a symptom of a classroom that's not engaging. So if you flip it around and talk about an active learning classroom where students are more active participants in the learning process, then the technology question just goes away. There's a time and a place for technology in the classroom, a time and a place to have immediate online quizzes, engagement with social media. You can kind of go through a range of different activities. But if you really think of the classroom environment as an active environment for engagement, as opposed to just a delivery and receiver in a lecture hall, then the question about technology actually becomes much more interesting, and it becomes an opportunity to see how technology can be facilitated in the learning experience.
So give me an example of how you might have your students use Twitter in the midst of a lecture.
Well, I teach two main classes. One of them is actually doing labs in the field and in the forest and having students tweet what they're finding and engaging a broader community of naturalists and biologists out there to help them with their problems on the spot. In a traditional lecture hall, I've had students use the course hashtag and question something that I lectured on, and then later on I would follow up on that and report back to the class in the next lecture. So there is a time and a place for it, and I think it's important that a professor and an instructor kind of sets some guidelines and has a really honest discussion with the class about the role of technology in that particular classroom, and then it can be part of the process.
So I'm understanding they questioned what you were doing, like sort of out on social media, in a negative way, basically saying, what's he doing?
not I wouldn't say negative, but just saying, you know, this is something that Professor Buttle talked about during lecture today. And when I got back to my office and checked the Twitter feed, I went, huh, that's interesting. That's how that was interpreted. So I better follow up on that because there appears to be a bit of confusion around that particular topic.
Okay, well, they're sitting right in front of you. Wouldn't it have been better if they raised their hand and asked you to clarify?
So that's a great question, and I think it's important to recognize that for a lot of students, raising a hand and asking a question in class is a very intimidating experience. And so what technology can do is actually offer an opportunity for more people in the class to engage with the classroom material.
Hmm. At the same time, they're putting out that student actually showed that they didn't understand to a whole bunch of other people. Isn't that intimidating?
Perhaps,
maybe,
but I
maybe
think,
for me, maybe not for them.
Right. I think it depends on the generation. I think for some students, that's the right way to do it. And other students, it's in the classroom environment. There's so many different kinds of learners out there, and technology is really important for a lot of students, whether it is note-taking because they can't actually do handwritten notes, or whether it's just a way that they engage on a daily basis with technology. So I think as instructors in a classroom, I actually think we have a responsibility to really embrace these different styles and recognize that whether a student asks a question on Twitter or whether they raise their hand, both are actually okay, but the instructor has to be flexible and willing to engage in those different ways.
And, but, you know, don't you get days when you're a little annoyed at distractions? Are they all using it that way? Or are they checking, you know, the latest YouTube?
Well, you know, a little while ago, and I have some administrative appointment in my faculty as well, and I decided I would be student for a day, and I sat in the classroom, different classrooms, for a whole day, and I was able to see the screens of the students in front of me, and I was assuming, everyone says, oh, they're always checking Facebook, they're always checking YouTube, they're not actually doing work within the classroom. And I was surprised, but out of all the computer screens that I was able to view from a student's perspective, they were all doing something related to the course, whether it was following PowerPoints, taking notes, checking other materials on Google. So
that's pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive. But you're right. I think as an instructor, there are bad days where the lecture just doesn't go well and students might be distracted or nod off. But they did that before computers as well. So there are good days and bad days, and technology, it's easy to blame the technology instead of say, you know what, I need to up my game as an instructor.
Mm. Now, so, I mean, you're making the point that technology really has changed the way we learn and the way we interact with those who are teaching us.
It really has, and I think that's the fundamental piece there, is that the way we engage with knowledge and the way that students interact with knowledge and learn about content outside of kind of a traditional lecture material, I think it's changing the face of higher education. And that's why universities across the country are redesigning a lot of their classrooms to be active learning classrooms that fully engage technology, because there's a real recognition that the way that students and instructors engage with knowledge is changing. And so the classroom is a more dynamic place, all about synthesis, filtering information, discussion. And that's a really exciting time for higher education.
Well, if we follow that trail, if technology has changed and students can learn and get access to knowledge in so many different ways, do we need as many university professors?
Of course we do, because I think there's... I'm going to say that, of course. I think there's deep expertise that's gained over the course of an individual doing a PhD and going on to postdoc position and a professor position. There's a lot of deep knowledge, and that deep knowledge can play a couple of different roles. One, knowledge transmission. The other really is, look, how do we understand the massive amounts of data and information out there and do our best to package it appropriately and synthesize it appropriately? And we really need people that have that expertise to guide students and through the learning process. So I think it absolutely is still important.
And when do you go back in the classroom?
I was in last Friday. I was in the field with my students fighting mosquitoes and tweeting about it.
Okay. Well, thanks for speaking with me today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Chris Buttle teaches field biology and quantitative ecology at McGill University. Now, over to you. If you are a student or a teacher, tell us about your experiences with laptops and other devices in the classroom. Please do not do it while you are in class, and that goes for the profs as well. You can tweet us. We are at The Current. The Current CBC. You can email us from our website, cbc.ca/thecurrent, and click on the Contact Us link. Find us on Facebook after class. Stay with us. Coming up next, new thoughts on how to teach thinking, critical versus creative thinking in the classroom. We'll go through all of that. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, and online on cbc.ca/thecurrent.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.